Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
This podcast is called the Midweek Reality Check for a reason. You get the truth here. Very few places can provide you with the objective facts necessary to participate in bull markets while also protecting you from the bear market traps. So get ready to receive some vital truths today, as always. First off, the deal Republicans made with Democrats to raise the debt ceiling is supposed to save $1.5 trillion over 10 years. Save. The original bill passed by the House Republicans, which was called the Limit Save Growth Act, had proposed cuts of $4.8 trillion over a decade. Well, you can forget about that. Now we're hoping for $1.5 trillion. By the way, that bill, that Limit Save Growth Act, that bill was never voted on by the Senate, of course. It just died on the Senate floor. But they reached a compromise that in the end was politically expedient for both parties, but did nothing at all significant enough to change the nation's course towards insolvency. Only in D.C. would spending cuts, what they call spending cuts, involve spending more money than you ever did before. These agreed upon cuts are not really cuts at all, just a reduction in the growth rate of spending. The record pace of monetary tightening during just the past 15 months will soon be joined by a fiscal drag. And I am not just talking about that slight reduction in the proposed budgetary spending plans that were the result of the debt deal. Student loan repayments are set to resume in September as a direct result of that debt ceiling agreement. The average payment for a student loan is $393 per month, and there are 45 million borrowers with a total of $1.7 trillion in debt. These millions of people have not made a payment on their student loan balance since March of 2020. And now they're going to have to start paying. And I say wonderful for that. A triumph of capitalism. Their average loan balance for their student loans, the average balance is almost $40,000. Turning to the jobs market, which is what Wall Street permabulls love to point to as evidence for the soft landing scenario. Let's talk about that. Labor research firm Challenger Gray & Christmas says that planned layoffs have quadrupled year over year. Planned layoffs reached about 417,500 jobs through May of this year. There have been more layoffs this year so far to date through May than for all of the year 2022 already. Also, the May non-farm payroll report was not nearly as strong as reported by CNBC. First off, the unemployment rate rose from 3.5% to 3.7%. But there is a lot of other data in this report that belies the headline number of 339,000 increase in net new jobs created. Beat the number, beat expectations. Aren't we so glad the market is going to surge higher now because the economy is surging higher? Not true at all. The amount of average weekly hours worked declined to 34.3 from 34.4, which left the average work week at the lowest level since the COVID bottom of April 2020. Not only that, but the household survey, so there's two surveys, as you know, the establishment survey and the household survey in this non-farm payroll report. The household survey showed the number of unemployed persons increased, yes, rose by 440,000 people in May to 6.1 million people. So if you just took the headline household survey number, it was a loss of 440,000 jobs, not a gain of 339. But most importantly, the index of aggregate hours worked actually went down to 114.9 from 115. Slight tick down, but it's less. Meaning the total amount of labor hours worked during May shrank despite the purportedly strong labor market. There are less labor hours in the economy. So, yes, the headline figure was strong, but the actual labor market is weak and getting weaker. By the way, for the conspiracy theorists among you, the headline non-farm payroll report figure beat the consensus estimate of all the economists out there for an unprecedented 14 months in a row. I mean, flip a coin 14 times. See if it comes up tails every time. Not easy to do. That is nearly impossible to do without manipulating the numbers or the coin. How could it be possible that suddenly all of these innately optimistic Wall Street economists who cheerlead the economy and the market, and they analyze all the relevant economic data, they try to do a decent job from a, you know, a slightly biased point of view to the upside, but they try to do a good job as best they can, are all now suddenly consistently coming up with a number that ends up being below the BS from the non-farm payroll report, and often by a lot. If the economy and jobs were indeed strong, it would make sense that the service and manufacturing sectors would have to be strong as well, right? Those are the, other than the government, those are the two big sectors of the economy. But the opposite is the truth. The ISM services sector, service sector survey fell to 50.3 in May from 51.9 in April, which now means that the services sector of the economy is barely, just barely in expansion territory. The prices paid index fell to the lowest level since May of 2020. New orders dropped to 52.9 from 56.1. And the employment component fell, yes, fell into contractionary territory, 49.2. The services sector comprises the greatest portion of the U.S. economy. It's about 77%. So how can we have a very strong, surprise, beat the number, strong jobs number, and a strong jobs market if the largest part of the economy, by far, is losing jobs? Meanwhile, the ISM manufacturing survey fell into contraction territory further in May to 46.9 from 47.1. The new orders component dropped to 42.6 from an already abysmal 45.7 in April. And the prices paid component plunged to 44.2 from 53.2. That is unambiguously deflationary and recessionary. Here is another interesting fact you all should be aware of. According to a recent survey done by Georgetown University and the TIAA Institute, 42% of adults between 24 and 35 are living paycheck to paycheck. And more than half of these people, more than half of this cohort, do not expect to live better than their parents. Sadly, the living standards of our next generation are set to fall in the USA for the first time in our history. Turning to the markets, the gap between the S&P 500, which is up about 10% year-to-date, and the equal weight S&P 500, which is unchanged year-to-date, is huge. Huge. In fact, the last time the difference in performance was this large was during the previous tech bubble of 1999, where the S&P dropped 50%. That shows you how narrow and tenuous this rally is. The rally in the market on June 2nd, which was non-farm payroll Friday, was peculiar to say the least. It was all about the narrative of a rate hiking pause in the context of a strong economy. You know the deal. You get it. A supposedly strong non-farm payroll report, which I just proved false, coupled with the rumor that Powell was going to pause. Now, while it may be true that the Fed is done hiking rates for now, which, by the way, I agree is the case, how is it that the market does not care that borrowing costs, interest rates, absolutely spiked across the yield curve, regardless of the Fed's intentions. I mean, who cares if Powell's not going to raise short-term, you know, the interbank lending rate? Rates from T-bills to long-duration treasuries surged on that day, along with the stock market. That shouldn't be the case. Now, the last time the Treasury had to replenish the Treasury general account in 2011, bond yields did not rise. They actually fell. But if this time turns out to be indeed different, I find it absolutely incredulous that rising rates, regardless of what the Fed does, are good for the over-leveraged economy and will prove to somehow be beneficial to boost asset prices, which have become totally unhinged from any semblance of normalcy and got there by the fact that interest rates were near zero for 10 of the last 14 years. Please remember, from March of 2000 through the fall of 2002, the NASDAQ lost 83% of its value. During that time frame, the NASDAQ had four rallies that ranged between 28% and 49%. The plain truth is that markets do not move in a linear fashion. Getting caught up in chasing those rallies were lethal to your financial future. And I think chasing any kind of narrow AI rally today will yield the same results. This narrow rally, as I said, so far in 2023, does not change the fact that the business cycle is slowing and we are inching towards a very significant recession and brutal stock market debacle, the continuation of what happened in 2022. It's going to be the resumption of that crash. Don't forget, 1 year ago, the Fed funds rate was just 1%. A year ago today, it was only 1%. Today, it is over 5%. Since rate hikes work with about a year lag, we have only just begun to feel those nascent effects. In addition, we now feel the full effect. We will now feel the full effect of the $95 billion per month QT program without any offset from the draining of the Treasury's general account, which is money that lays fallow at the Fed. The Fed actually did $400 billion of QE in the past few months, offsetting its QT program. But now the opposite is happening as we drain $400 billion of liquidity over the next few weeks, according to the Treasury, in order to replenish the TGA. This is unprecedented monetary tightening coupled with the moderate fiscal drag starting this September. And that means the time frame for Armageddon to resume is between now and the fall.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.